Life. Table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Criticism.
Right.
Work.
Peace.
This is my mistake, and let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Word.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Focus.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and Mona is still a little under the weather this week, but I have a special guest here, Dan Lindsay, who is a coordinator with Rainbow Youth, and I would say a human rights activist, paying attention to many issues in Saskatchewan and Regina in particular. And we're going to, among other things, talk about homelessness. It's just not going away, and the lack of affordable housing in Regina, still an issue, not going away anytime soon. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, good to be back.
It is good to have you back here, and you've been involved in a lot of things in Regina and in the province, and let's start right off with raising the roof.
Yes, it's this Tuesday, February 7th, will be Took Tuesday again this year, and it's our second year at Rainbow that we've been lucky enough to be selected to hold the Took Tuesday. And it's a great organization. It's probably one of the best charity organizations I've come across. Because it deals with just us little guys, nonprofits, coast to coast across the country.
So this is national?
This is a national campaign. We're actually 15 years.
Wow.
15 years. And I think our goal this year, Canada-wide, is to... We met our goal last year, 40,000, so now we want to sell 45,000 toques this year. And we're just under 600,000 toques sold in 15 years. $10 bucks a pop. And basically... 50% of that goes to the agency who's selling the toques.
That was my next question.
Yeah,
where's the money go?
No, the money goes stays right here in Regina.
Okay.
Well, it actually comes to Rainbow.
It,
for our homeless and helping youth that are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless, and
right.
with programming and services. So that's huge. I can't say enough about Raising the Roof nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that, some of that money, 20% goes to their youth homelessness strategy, which
mm-hmm.
pays for all the. You'll see. You've seen them on on the commercials on TV, coast to coast, radio ads, prints, research. They do a lot of research on youth homelessness. So, you know, 20% goes to that, and the rest of the money goes to, you know, buying the toques and supply right. And shipping them to us. When, you know, if I order 1,000 toques, they ship them to me, it costs us nothing because we don't have any money to get set up to do these things.
Right.
So they send us the toques, and then we just go out and start selling them.
And speaking of Rainbow Youth, that's coming to an end.
No.
No?
No, 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 no,
no. No. Okay,
no,
pardon
no,
me.
No, Rainbow is 30 years. Yeah, no, 30-year anniversary. Rainbow is going to go on forever. What is coming is the program I'm coordinator of,
okay.
Youth Express. That we started in 2008 as a pilot project, and as of March 31st, unless we find some funding between now and then to keep the program going, the housing and homeless portion will be shutting down.
And we wish we could say it was shutting down because there was no need.
Yeah, well, no, and it's a funding issue, but our funding has been from through Service Canada, through the homeless partnering strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been, well, since August 2008 till now, funded
right.
by them.
Right.
And the hats off to Service Canada because mm-hmm. they don't fund programs.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So how we've been operating all these years already, you know,
right.
2.5, 3 years, is a miracle.
Okay.
And I just, you know, I can't say enough about, you know, the homeless partnering strategy and Regina Homeless Committee and, you know, Service Canada for funding us as long as they have. We just have not been able to find sustainability
mm-hmm.
Funding, only because we're not like a program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't come, we provide services. We connect youth to a home or different mirage of agencies, social services, family court, landlords, landlord tenants,
right.
food banks, food referrals, whatever we need to keep stabilize the youth and get them living on their own.
So what's going to happen is it somehow going to they're going to attempt to manage at Rainbow Youth or
well. This program, it came out, how it came about being is other programs like Kids First and at Rainbow, our Young Parent Program, but like that's how I met Mona, Work
mm-hmm.
Prep.
Right.
These people, other agencies that are, you know, have a program and a directive to deliver these services to,
mm-hmm.
to youth, and they ended up spending most of their time dealing with the crisis of those youth now being homeless.
Right.
So how can I go continue my Work Prep program and stuff? Because it really ballooned in 2008 was the big start of it. We ended up having to say, okay, well, we need one program, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that will deal with the youth and their homeless issues, and we can now deliver our programs and keep delivering our programs. So that's how it was born.
It's interesting how it. When you talk about any of these issues, it always boils down to homelessness. It's one of the underlying causes of every problem you want to talk about here in Regina, as far as disadvantaged people are concerned.
Yes, and it comes down to like we. A lot of people might be aware. It's called the At Home Study, biggest study ever done in Canada ever,
mm-hmm.
And. It's been a 5-year study and on housing first because
right.
we always had these things like, okay, if you're an addict, get cleaned up, you know, get sober, get a job, and then we'll get you a house. Well, that just
yeah.
doesn't work.
No.
They are finding great success that if we take people off the street, get them housed,
mm-hmm. right.
then we can deal with the other issues.
Right.
Instead of sending somebody out with no money and no way to do anything, say, oh, you got to go to these 10 agencies. How are they going to do it?
Yeah.
You're set up to fail before they begin. Is if we get somebody in a house, bring the services to them, and over the long run, we have far greater success of, you know, people, you know, I won't say reintegrating to society, but you know, getting off their addictions, you know, dealing with whatever issues they have to deal with, getting education, job training, getting jobs, and becoming taxpayers.
Right. Right.
It's just more economically makes, and it's been proven through in the United States to. You know, save up to 2/3 of the money we're spending now. So that's
right. Yeah, I was just thinking of a story. It really didn't relate much to homelessness, but it's a situation. in which an Air Force guy is flying his group of jets along there, and they're just about ready to run out of fuel. And he's being vectored all around the sky, and they're waiting for a clearance to land. And finally asks the controller, you know, hey, when can we land, sort of thing. Well, you know, you got to take your turn. Are you declaring an emergency? And he says, no, but you're going to be creating one.
If you don't get me landed.
And similarly here, I have a really long stretch, I guess, but my stretch here is that you're creating an emergency when you don't provide the homelessness a place to land, if you will.
Well, yes. And that's a complex issue, too.
Yep.
You know, everybody's going, oh, we're booming. Well, you know, I'm old enough, and I've actually moved across this country, beautiful country, three times.
Yeah.
Going to the booms.
Yeah.
Because what we are totally blinded to the fact here, and because I don't think Saskatchewan's ever boomed before, is there's something that comes after a boom.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a bust.
Yeah.
and if you think things are bad now, wait, if we don't deal with it now. Afterwards, you're not going to have time because it's going to be even worse when the bus comes. And people talk about housing prices and things like that. I remember back in about 85, I think, something like that. And Fort McMurray is a really good place to look at. It's about $4,000 a month average to rent a room in a house in Fort Mac right now.
Right.
Because the commodities are up. But when that little bubble's burst, and it's done twice in the last 30 years, they were selling houses for $10,000.
Yeah, yeah.
They couldn't give them away. And then it opens up again, and then you get the onslaught, right? So it's and that's kind of, you know, the housing things that happen. You know, that happened. A big bust there in the 80s in BC. Everybody moved to Ontario. They had the big boom, and everybody had to move back. So when you've been a part of those migrations, and you see the bus, it only takes weeks for the bus to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked for PCL in Toronto, we had 3,000 employees. In 6 weeks, we had down to 198.
Boom. Wow.
After that's after the bubble burst.
Mm.
So that's how fast it happens.
And I see it predicted. I was perusing some magazines in a store last night, and I see on the magazine cover, the bust is coming.
Well, yeah, and you know, it might be 5 years, it might be 10 years, it might be 20 years. You don't know. But since 2008, you know, the world economy, it's not like the other one. You'd almost say the boom bust things were every 20 years, but there's no rhyme or reason right now. It could happen tomorrow, you know, with the world tensions and oil and all this stuff. Things could just go crazy, right? But we better start preparing for the bust as well. And that again, that you know, it's about homelessness. So,
yeah, I don't know whether you could say that cycle is kind of a root cause of the whole thing, but somebody has to get down, I think, to the root causes of the issues that we're facing here right now. We're talking about just briefly about HIV, and there are other issues as well. But you were at a conference where
we went Anne Livingston came out to Carmichael. It was just the other night, and she's from Vandu in Vancouver. And that's my old stomping grounds, you know, downtown east side. And Vandu is Vancouver Association of Drug Users. So, and it's really clear, we have all these people making rules and regulations, you know, how to help people with addictions or drug users.
Right.
Do we ever ask the drug users what they need?
No. Probably not.
And they found when you can organize the people that are the people you're supposed to be helping,
mm-hmm.
doesn't matter what kind of group it is, they're the ones who will tell you what we need,
mm-hmm.
not imposing what you think they may need. So they're an equal part of the equation when you deal with these things, right? So when we're looking at, you know, like the HIV right now in Saskatchewan, right? And it's a lot. It's in our Aboriginal communities. Well, we better engage, you know, pause people in these conversations, right? And you look into it overall. You know, housing is a major one. It's the poverty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, University of Regina, they were there as to the Department of Social Work, and they've just done this really awesome little workbook and a DVD, This Is Us, Voices from the Street, a video and resource kit. I was lucky enough to snag one. And I stayed up till 12 o'clock, got home, and watched the whole video, 58-minute video.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they trained people on the street. You know, these were people with addictions or were struggling with addictions, coming out of addictions, or some still were in it. But what they did is they trained them how to use all the equipment, how to edit it, and the university set it up and supervised it and financed it, and they let them put this video together. And it's called This Is Us. And it is such a powerful, powerful video. At one point, you almost get a couple of tears there. That's going to be coming out. I know they kind of introduced it the other night at Carmichael. But when you look at poverty, you know, poverty is kind of a root cause for, you know, many things when we get to the poverty. But, and these are the latest stats that were, that they've put out. And they come from No Closer to the Truth, and it was a social policy research unit in 2011, and then Something About Poverty, Poverty Free Saskatchewan, 2010. So these are pretty recent stats. So your chances of being poor in Saskatchewan, and we can say this today because these are like, you know, SaskCan stats we get, they're always kind of 4 years behind. These are right up there. For all people, is 11.7%. Now, if you're a child, it's 15.2%. If you're a single woman, 30.3%. If you're a senior citizen, 30.5%. Those are frightening high numbers. You know, we're getting 30%. If you're a female senior, now you can take that to 33%. If you're a single parent, 52.4% is your chances. And if you just happen to be an Aboriginal person, it's 54%.
Wow.
That's just the poverty. Everything else is connected into that. That's where your homelessness comes from. That's where your addiction issues come from. That's where your crime comes from. All the social issues will come out of poverty.
Right.
You know, eventually. It's all connected. That's why you say I'm connected, you know, lots of different things. You kind of have to be because they're all connected.
Right. Right.
You know, and how do we deal with people in a good way, you know, that are, you know, that are HIV positive when they're homeless? These people need proper nutrition. You know, they have to look after their health. They, you know, they have, you know, meds they have to take and stuff. How do you do that when you have no place to live and you're couch surfing and, you know, sometimes getting, you know, 8 hours sleep in 2 days because you got to keep moving from one warm spot to another spot?
Yeah.
You can't. So, and that goes for, you know, anybody, you know. How are they supposed to apply for a job when they have no address? Right, and then our system's set up to fail. So if you house somebody, if they go and house somebody and they happen to be on social services, and, you know, you let them crash on their couch and, you know, they got to pay $100 for room and board, well, now we punish the person who let them crash on the couch and paid $100 because, oh, now you got income.
So it's
just crazy, right? So our systems are set up that people have to, they're designed, not maybe on purpose, but they're designed to make people, you know, lie and hide, and other people call it cheating, but it's not. It's like you have to survive. You know, you have to survive.
I'm just wondering, in your opinion, have any of the governments, municipal, provincial, federal, done anything? I mean, do they seem to be recognizing and doing anything that addresses these problems, or is it kind of a wasteland out there?
I haven't seen anything that's been effective to date. You know, like our housing program that came out last year, it's more designed for, you know, people that, you know, making $50,000 up, you know, first-time home buyers and,
oh, sure,
and things like that. None of the people I work with are going to be first-time home buyers really soon. And then you have different, you know... So, not really. But on the other hand, you know, the reality is, and I work with a lot of people in the homelessness, you know, we got to have all these social units, you know, social housing. Well, okay, so let's go out. We build 1,500 or 2,000 social housing units, right? What happens when the bus comes? And all these people that have moved in and, you know, and adding to our, you know, we had a housing shortage to begin with, but now it's really compounded. When all those people move away and go back to wherever the new boom's going to be, now we're going to have all these empty places. And that's what happens, like in the States, where now people start, now I'm unemployed. Yes, I have no education. They just want a warm body to bust some pipes down at Estevan on an oil rig. I'm getting $30 an hour. My girlfriend's working. We got 2 years under our belt, and this happened in Toronto. Hey, we're putting a down payment on a house now that's, you know, $250,000. We're buying this house, and then 2 years down the road, the bus,
yep,
or however long. Now, there's 3,000 of us just like this, and basically we're laborers.
Right.
And we're all fighting for a job at McDonald's. Now I'm going to lose my house. And this is where you get that cycle going.
Right.
So now everything implodes, and now we have a... So, and that happened. That's, you know, in the future. So you have to balance it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I understand where, you know, the government might be reluctant to go out and build all this stuff, but I don't think it's really an issue, because we also know that since 1976 in Saskatchewan alone, the top 20% of the income earners have gotten richer, and the other 80% since then has either stayed the same or declined. And that goes into the whole, you know, occupied movement about the 99 and the 1%.
Right.
So all these things are entwined. You can't, and this is where we get into target funding.
Mm-hmm.
Target funding is great if you're the guy who has to put it together, because, you know, you got 100 beans to deal with, and you divvied up this way, and it's done, and it's nice and neat, and it's all great on paper. And it's like saying about hunger. So if we take $10 million, buy everybody food, 10 months, we don't have a hunger problem, and we can hold that up. Look, we solved the problem.
Right.
But the day that funding dries up, next thing you know, as people's cupboards get emptied out, all of a sudden we have a growing hunger issue again. So it's, you know, it looks good on paper,
mm-hmm,
and it's good, it's easy to account for.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I was just thinking, we were talking about affordable housing there, and I know, like, the province has a program here now where I think they're assisting people, first-time home buyers, like you were saying,
mm-hmm,
and I think the units that are being made available are something like 130,000, am I right?
Or, I think
it's over $100,000 anyway.
Yeah.
But it, to me, that doesn't address the homeless problem.
No.
You know, like as far as people who don't have a job or they're working on minimum wage, I mean, you're not going to buy
two people working on minimum wage.
Yeah.
Can't afford to rent a place.
Right.
Well, they can rent a place,
but now they
can't afford to live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's the old commercial. You know, the roof comes off, pay the rent, or the lights go out. Right.
Right.
And so you're there, and we do have a thing. You know, we have a wonderful thing. You know, for rental, the home supplement.
Mm-hmm.
I think you get up to like $265. You know, if you're mm-hmm qualified, you're low income. Awesome program. I love it. There's nothing wrong with that program.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that program is they have a certain checklist that you have to meet.
Okay.
Okay. Like, does the rental unit have smoke detectors?
Yeah.
One of the questions, does it have hot and cold running water?
Uh-huh.
Do the doors open and close and lock? When you walk up the front porch, do you fall through the porch and the stairs? So we're not talking about a $100,000 renovation to a house, right? We have houses that are being rented that don't meet those very minimal basic safety standards.
Mm-hmm.
And what needs to be changed in that program, and I'm not talking we license landlords or anything like this, I'm talking about if you don't, that unit does not meet the basic minimum health and safety standards to be eligible for the rental supplement, it should be illegal to rent.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner of that place can put in the $5,000 and fix it, bring it up to a minimal standard. Because if we don't, then why not? Why don't we just rent out trailers and shipping containers?
Right.
You know, we do supposedly have, you know, building codes and things you have to meet. And when we have these house fires that you've seen in Winnipeg where people are dying,
mm-hmm,
because they don't have smoke detectors or this, that, and the other thing, I think at the end of the day, the ultimate person responsible is the government. Because they will not just do a basic, you know, like you have to have these things to rent a unit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have them, then you can't rent it.
That would make sense. That would make sense. I was just thinking, as you were talking here, there's a whole group of social housing units on the east side that I noticed they're all being worked on because I think they have mold in the basement. They had water issues. and there's a whole swack of them that are being fixed as we speak.
Well, that was, you know, last year in the budget, and that's the only thing that's been in the budget, is $34 million
mm-hmm.
for Saskatchewan. But that's province-wide. That's Fond du Lac, too, or, you know, wherever. That's all over. $34 million is a great number for Regina. You know, the reality with the problem we're facing. There was a lot of these places, I don't know, and it's, I'm familiar with the units you're talking about, and that's a lot of that money is going to fix up those places and, mm-hmm. and get them back on the market, because they were shut down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And why they were empty is still beyond me, because you go back to when the government was elected, they actually cut $8 million a year out of that budget. So when the, you know, that's $32 million 4 years later they're now putting back in. So those places have been empty. So when you what happens when you leave your cottage or your house empty for 2 years?
Yeah, you have a lot of work to do.
The mice take over and everything, and then you got to go in and renovate and pull rugs and fix things. So, you know, it was.
And then they were unable to stop the demolition of those. Well, I mean, it hasn't happened yet. Those 58 units that the building that the owners wanted to demolish.
You know, that, and this is where it's very emotional, and all my coworkers are going to hang me. But you know, I think long and hard on this too, right? It's we look at, you know, Regina, can you compare it to other cities, you know, maybe outside of Winnipeg. You go to Toronto, you go to Vancouver, you go to Calgary, you will not see any homes
mm-hmm.
that are, you know, unless they're heritage homes and they're million-dollar right. mansions, right. you will not see any homes as ancient and old as the housing stock that is the regular housing that we have here in Regina. So it comes down to private property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I want to tear down my garage and build a new one, and you're telling me I can't. Mm-hmm. or you're telling me what I have to build on in my backyard, or
right.
what style of. And we do have mm-hmm. bylaws and things like that. So you really get into an area where, you know, I think under the emergency of housing, that these places actually have to prove that it is. And working in construction all the years that I have, I know for a fact sometimes to fix a problem, you got to tear it down and build a new one.
Mm-hmm.
My
mm-hmm.
concern is, are they tearing it down and they're going to build condominiums and sell them at $1.2 million? That's the question, because of the market value. You're in, speculate, make a quick buck while everything's high. That's where it gets dicey.
Yep. Okay, well, it's time for a break here, so we're going to do that break and play some Phil Collins at the end of it, and we will be back.
Just in case.
Just think about it.
And that was a live performance by Phil Collins of Another Day in Paradise, talking about homelessness and a topic dear to our heart, or not exactly dear, but it's top of mind. And I am Jim Hutchings, and I'm here with my good friend Dan Lindsay. And Dan is right in the thick of it. He's a coordinator at Rainbow Youth. And let's talk some more about selling toques.
Yeah.
When are we going to be doing that again, Dan?
This Tuesday. And we're going to be, what do they call it? I call it this Scarth Street Mall, F.W. Mill Mall.
F.W. Hill.
Hill, okay. Yeah. And, you know, in that walkway, we're going to be out. And this year, I'm again recruiting. We have a program at Rainbow Youth Center, Road to Employment. That's 20 youth that come for a whole year. They study to get their GED, their driver's license, some life skills, job shadowing, and job placements. And they're coming out in full force on Tuesday to help me or help us, you know, sell toques. And our headquarters this year is the Dalai Lama, which is located right there. this is... I just love them. If you go there, actually, they've been running, it's 15% off your lunch. If you go in there, buy lunch and buy a toque. They have a display all set up for the toques. And how that came about to be was last year we were set up for Toque Tuesday in the mall, and it was minus 40 without the wind chill.
Right.
And it was bitter cold. It was bitter cold. And we were there first thing in the morning setting up, and... in fact, I almost didn't go to the mall this year because last year what happened was here we are selling toques and, you know, braving the bitter cold.
Right.
And we were set up in front of, like, the Globe Theater right across from the mall.
Okay.
And right behind the Globe Theater, you know, there was some ruckus going on. And,
right.
You know, and we kind of found, you know, what was going on is they discovered a woman's body. Basically 200 feet away from us.
Right.
We're selling toques to bring awareness about youth homelessness.
Right.
And here's this woman found, you know, in behind the dumpster, you know, who froze to death throughout the night.
Right.
And it really kind of, it was just very surreal because in the mall itself, and the wind just whips through there. And, you know, not too many people are out window shopping. So it was like deserted. It was just a very surreal thing for the rest of the day. And it kind of didn't make it a happy thing. And then I thought, you know, we'll pick another place. And I thought, no, we're going to be there. And we're going to sell our toques again. and not even so much about the fundraising, but to honor this woman who froze to death,
right?
And remember her, because all across this country, people do freeze to death, and that's kind of a good kept secret too. Yeah. We don't want that getting out.
Was
it
in the news at all, or? Did you hear anything about it?
They really tied it down, and the only thing they, you know, I heard, oh, somebody said, oh, she wasn't homeless. And then we have the black humor, you know, that things like that, or else, you know, sometimes if you don't laugh, you're going to end up just crying.
Yeah.
And remember somebody said, oh, that's right, you know, she was just a tired shopper and had to take a rest and... You know, like how do you freeze to death, and you know, in that situation, right? But you know, we've had that before. We had a few cases last year. Thank goodness that we've had the winter that we've had this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, for sure. It just reminds me of a story one of our friends was telling, that she was homeless on the streets, and one of the things you look for at night is a nice cardboard box. You know.
Anything, you know, well, the wind chill, eh? You got to cut the wind chill, eh? So. And that was it, you know, people go, you know, because I'm from back west, right? But they say, oh, Vancouver, you know, people don't freeze to death. I say, no, people don't freeze to death.
Yeah.
But they die of pneumonia.
Sure.
Because you try being continually wet and damp because it rains for 6 months, and it is, you know, it gets down to 2 degrees or sometimes zero, sometimes, you know, you're just continually being wet.
Yeah, you don't have to freeze.
It's
called hypothermia.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're cold enough long enough, you will not survive.
We end up, because, and this is the same thing, a lot of the people on the street, their immune systems are already, you know, affected because they might, you know, be dual diagnosed with, you know, HIV, Hep C, you know, low nutrition, you know, improper diets, you're already sick, and then so, you know, you pick up pneumonia real quick and...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you die off. When we were down there, when we did the squat, we finally convinced a woman, Aboriginal lady, who was very sick. She was, you know, staying with us in the tents at the squat there at Woodward's. And she wouldn't go. She refused to go because of the treatment she's had before at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So after a few days where, like, she was, like, she's going, you know, she's going to die here, right?
Right,
like,
right.
She's going to die. So we can, you know, and you can't force people to get treatment, but we convinced her to go to the hospital, and she did. So we called an ambulance. They came and they took her to the hospital, and this was, I don't know, about 10:30 at night, and felt pretty good, right? We're having coffee and some smoke sitting around, and about 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the morning, she comes walking into camp, you know, to the squat and to her tent, and it's like, well, what are you doing here? I said, well, an emergency. They put her in, you know, a bed with warm blankets.
Yep.
Right? And they warmed her up and gave her the oxygen, I guess, was warmed up. And, you know, gave her a mist spray and
good to go.
And an order for some antibiotics and turned her back out on the street. I was just appalled. This is the way we treat our poor. This is how we treat homeless people.
Right, right.
You know?
And, you know, and Just to backtrack on stuff we've talked about many times before, but I think it needs to be said, and the message just isn't getting through, just from a, not even a compassionate point of view. Forget compassion. Dollars and cents. If you have a homeless person on the street who is unable to look after their health, that person is going to be using emergency services like police, like ambulance, the ER, and
those reports are all in. And Vancouver pegged it between $50,000 and $58,000 a year to keep a homeless person homeless to do nothing for them. Right?
Yeah.
That's the cost.
Yeah.
Calgary puts it at $135,000
per person.
A year.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, with that, you know, you can rent some guy a really nice, you know, condo for that, you know, that type of money, and still save money, come out on top, right?
Yeah.
And yet we turn around saying, no, the healthcare is crumbling because of all the money we're spending. No, the municipal budget for policing. So it does cost cities too.
Yeah.
You know, cities, you know, the feds don't pay for policing. You know, our property taxes costing me my property taxes, right? So, but I forgot to say when we went back to the selling the toques last year, and it was minus 40,
right?
And that's how Dalai Lama got involved. Is the lady, the owner there, she came, she saw what we were doing. They came out and they bought some toques, and then she came out and she said, would you guys please come down? And we have some hot soup for you, so, you know, send these guys down for thaw out. And then so we went down, and we had this wonderful bowl of hot soup, and they let us sit in and warm up. And then we started doing shift work, going out to sell toques. So this year we're going to be, you know, that's our headquarters, and they're just, you know, 200% behind us. I just wanted to acknowledge that. A little bit of a shameless plug there for people in the community supporting these initiatives.
I was just going to say, this reminds me, and the same sort of situation happened with the Occupy site. There were people who were helping, you know, people who brought soup, people who brought blankets.
Tons of people.
Yeah.
Tons of people.
And they wanted to help. I think that in general, people are overwhelmed by the scale of the crisis that exists right now, and they don't know what to do. And when they have an opportunity to help, they will. They do.
You know? Yeah. I believe that, too. But it just seems trying to get the message up to the top, because we need...
There's where the problem is.
You see, we're one of the only, you know, G20 countries.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have a national housing strategy.
Yeah.
You know, why not? We're supposed to be one of the richest countries. We're supposed to have that.
Yeah.
They keep shooting it down. We need to break the barriers down, like they have in other provinces, only because they were forced to,
mm-hmm.
because of their housing and homeless crisis. You know, British Columbia, Alberta. Like, why don't we learn from them instead of making 20 years of stumbling blindly through and making the same mistakes they did? Why don't we just jump 20 years into the future, do what they're working? Housing First is all over Alberta. The city of Vancouver, you know, they had the old slum hotels that the people on welfare and the home, you know, that's where they went. The city bought them, renovated them, because they were being condemned and we were having mass evictions where 70 people were being thrown out on the street instantly,
mm-hmm. right.
because it was not up to fire codes and stuff. So they bought them. They renovated them. The rent is the same. If you get $350 for a rent allowance on social services, that's what you pay for your unit.
Mm-hmm.
And now these people are housed. There was 1,100 units they did through that. And now they're at the point where they've turned it over to, a nonprofit society to run and org, you know, and
right.
keep it going. So that, you know, it's not still the best, but it's better than nothing. So the city has to get involved, the province has to get involved, and the feds have to get involved.
Yep,
as all equal partners.
I would like to see the same amount of dedication that city council seems to have for their, whatever they're calling it, stadium, for want of a better word. I know they don't like using that word, but they're so gung-ho at getting that organized and built. I'd like to see the same level of concern for looking after the homeless problem in this city.
You know what I want to do, and I just discovered this about a week or so ago on the news, and I just loved it, is in Florida, one of the state legislators, your guys or whoever, they uncovered a law. This is the law in the state of Florida. Any stadium or arena that is built using public funds of any kind must be opened up to the homeless every day that it is not in use.
Wow.
It was from 1988. Now they're amending that law, because a lot of these guys that own these stadiums and mm-hmm. whatnot are saying, well, we don't want them in here, but, you know,
yeah.
on those days. And they say, fine, we're going to make an amendment to the law. So you don't have to open it up to the homeless, but you're going to pay $10,000 a day every day it's closed, when it could be opened up to. And we will take that money and use that to fund mm-hmm. other initiatives for homeless people. You know, we got to look at states. They do it. You know, they do another thing they're doing is, you know, discharging people from hospital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is, you know, homeless people with no place to go, and they're having, like, serious surgeries or, you know, amputations,
right.
whatever. So what, you discharge them onto the street? Well, or do you keep them in bed, tie up the beds? Because
mm-hmm.
the beds are, you know, thousands of dollars, keep you in there for a couple of weeks. Well, what they've done now is they've gone either and bought, or in most cases they lease, you know, just some strip hotels.
Sure.
Right now they're releasing these people to these stripped hotels, right? And everybody's got a room and you're there, but they're not leaving it there. Now they have a nurse come by. She does her rounds, changes the Band-Aids, you know, gives the medication. People might need help bathing or whatever. They get all that done. So the home care is provided in these stripped hotels. But they just don't leave it there because you can't stay there forever.
Right.
You know, sooner or later you're going to recover and you have to move it on. Well, then they bring in somebody like me. Okay, let's get you lined up. Let's find out what is it you need, where are you going to go, how are we going to get you there, what do you need to get there? Because that's what we do. You have to get your ID before you can fill out low-income housing forms. You know, so we do all that stuff. That's what we do at Youth Express. So then if there's addiction issues or anything else, well, we'll get you hooked up with an addictions counselor. We'll get you hooked up, if it's domestic violence, with domestic violence people. And they do that all out of this, almost like a triage center. Mm-hmm. And they've already, they know, they two-thirds of the cost of just keeping the person in the hospital, they save.
Yep.
And they provide all these services as well, where the hospital provides no services except for the health care.
This kind of sounds similar to what I heard I think it was a doctor in the province here talking about our crowded hospitals. There are people in hospital beds here that don't need to be, they don't need to have that level of care. They just need some place to convalesce. And so I guess you've got it at both ends.
Saskatoon's doing a pilot project on this home care thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
That you can... the person come home and stay at home, and I'm not sure about all the particulars, but what I did hear, I heard an interview, and it's really good, and that's what has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had my father-in-law, you know, he's since passed from cancer,
right,
but we had him at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Aboriginal people, that's what we want.
Right.
And we actually, the palliative care people and everyone were really good. You know, they got us hospital beds and everything. They helped us, you know, get through the system. I could have used a little bit more help at home, but, you know, I'm not going to complain. It was very good for our family that we were able to, you know, to keep them at home,
right,
as long as we could. And those are things that we have to explore more of,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's cheaper, again, in the long run than tying up a hospital bed.
It certainly is.
And what kind of care do we give to somebody? You know, and I've been in the hospital, in emergency wards, going to somewhere, and you see this frail, you know, old woman lying in a gurney in a hallway. How degrading is that to that person? Not just to that person, to me, walking by. Like this should be illegal in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. So.
There are. And, you know, just to boil it all down, tie it all together here, it really does boil down to this homeless issue. It really does. Because if people have a home they can look after themselves or can be looked after in situations like, if you don't have a home, you cannot get proper care.
If you don't have a home, there's no palliative care.
Yeah.
There's nothing. You don't even have that option.
Yeah,
so why are we going to do studies and experiments in Saskatoon about doing home care and palliative care when you're right, when a lot of people don't have the home?
Yeah, it's bad
for
youth.
So you got to start at the foundation.
Youth can't get started, and the old have no dignity without a home.
Yeah, and we're only going to be getting more and more seniors, and most seniors are happy at home.
It's such a universal problem. I'm really hoping that our senior governments, the provincial government especially, can get a handle on it, because I'm sorry, fellas, I know you think you're doing a good job, but talk to the fellows on the front line, like Dan here.
And we're not talking that we're going to go out and buy everybody a house.
Yeah.
We're not talking, not everybody, and I have a lot of my clients, like a lot of people are going to be renters for the rest of their lives. They're not going to be homeowners.
Yep.
I'm not saying you have a right and the government has to buy you a house. But, you know, there's subsidized housing. There's old age, housing, retirement homes, all different kinds of things that we have to look at, right?
Yep.
But the fundamental is, if you do not have four walls and a roof, we can't even begin to give you any of these services.
Yep.
So all these things, healthcare, everything is connected, as we said, to having four walls and a roof.
And if you do provide this sort of basic level of housing for everyone, the savings are there in emergency services.
Yes. But the thing is what you're not going to see, as I said about, you know, you take $10 million, there's a hunger problem.
Yep.
In 10 months, this election phase, right?
Yep.
We can say, oh, we eliminated hunger in 10 months. Look how great we are.
Yep.
Yes, you're going to see that. And then when the funding's gone, it comes back. Yep. What we have to do this, and this is going to be over a period of years where you're going to actually start seeing. Because now, it takes time because the budgets are done over a year. You know, you're going to take probably 5 years before you're actually going to see the health care budgets come down. Corrections budget. You know, why are we keeping people in jail at $80,000 a year when if you went out and rented them a house for $12,000?
Yep. Problems have to be recognized.
Yeah.
And plans made. A good example, Edmonton, 10-year plan to take their 3,000 homeless people off the streets, and they're well on their way to their goal now.
Vancouver has it too.
They're only a few years in. You know.
Vancouver has it too. Calgary has it too.
Yeah.
Toronto has it too.
Yeah.
And
so why doesn't Regina have it?
Well, because we're still looking at, is housing first? You know, is that a model? Does it work? Does it not? There's 10 years of research and studies already done. So why are we spending money to do more research and more studies? And in fact, they're coming out this year. They're offering money to study youth homelessness.
Yeah.
Well, there's already bigger and better organizations than anywhere that you can find in Saskatchewan that have done those studies. They're up to date. The issues between Winnipeg and Regina really aren't any different. Yeah.
So let's get on this. Let's get on this.
Yeah, we got to get on it.
Yeah. Before we go.
Yes, just a footnote. I'm so proud. Another involvement is that I sit on the Committee of Future Generations, you know, to say no about, you know, turning Saskatchewan into a nuclear waste dump for the free world. And we did our walk last year, the Say No Walk, from Pinehouse to Regina. And on tomorrow in Saskatoon, five of the youth that walked from Pinehouse all the way to Regina, they are being given Global Citizen Awards.
Wow.
And they were some magazine in Regina. I guess when we got here, they interviewed a bunch of people and they nominated these youth for this global award. So it caught everybody in the committee and of course the youth totally off guard and surprised them. And it's here I am sitting in Pinehouse, a kid in Pinehouse, a kid in Beauval and English River, saying, way in the north, saying I'm being recognized, provincially and globally for what I did, right? And just encourage youth that yes, you can
make a
change
difference.
The world.
Right.
You can make a difference.
Yeah.
And so we're heading up to Saskatoon to watch these young people receive their awards tomorrow.
So how many are there?
There's five of them that are. They came the whole 850 kilometers.
That is.
And actually, it was funny because one of the kids he signed up to walk from Pinehouse. Went to Pinehouse and walked to Beauval and that where he lives, and that's what he was doing.
Right.
And then the next morning when we started off, it was like 20 people. When the group started off, he found himself still walking. And then he found himself in Saskatoon in PA, and then he found himself in Regina. So they just followed their hearts.
Yeah.
Followed their beliefs.
So while we're on that topic, just Roman, how is that going? Things fairly quiet now, or
is Nemo
still busy up there trying to garner support?
Or? Yeah, we're still fighting it, and it's the corporations have they're just hell bent on because the nuclear waste dump itself is a front for nuclear waste reprocessing. And if you look, if you take sociology in University of Saskatoon for years, mm-hmm. you can only go for 3 years. You cannot. There's no money to get your fourth year to get your degree. But they're now putting in over $100 million to turn it into a whole nuclear facility. The UDP wants nuclear waste dump, nuclear waste reprocessing. Now they're calling them small nuclear reactors here in Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just insanity.
The continuing story.
Insanity.
Anyway, we've got to cut it off there, Dan. And good talking to you again.
Oh, it's good to be back.
And we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For info on past and upcoming shows, With links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, founder of Amnesty International, said, "Only when the last prisoner of conscience has been freed, the last torture chamber